This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, I think we will go ahead and call the meeting to order. We'll go ahead and do our items here at the top, and then we'll welcome our speaker here. Our usual roll call, and I'll turn it over to Casey to do that.
Okay. Ian Akishola.
Here.
Valerie Amer.
Here.
Marcy Benda.
Here.
Richard Benzel.
Here.
Duncan Katie.
Here.
Nicola Dana.
Here.
Eve DeRosa.
Here.
Jacob Veit.
On his way.
Okay, Brandon Fortenberry.
Here.
Thomas Fox.
Here.
Preston Hanley.
Here.
David Heiner.
Here.
Deborah Howell. Carolyn Levine.
Here.
Manaya Lewis. Annalia Noinier.
Here.
James Richards. Stephanie Tanis. Jessica Withers.
Here.
And Manaya Lewis just joined.
Perfect.
Manaya, I let Casey know that you just joined the Zoom, and she was doing a roll call for that. You want it? All right. I'll do the land acknowledgement that I still need my cheat sheet for. My internet isn't working. Oh no. Someone mind. I don't know why my computer has crapped out on me on the internet here. I apologize. Thank you very much, Ian. All right. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Anishinaabe Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Thank you. All right, and now with that, I'll call for any late additions to the agenda. Seeing none. We will move on to approval of the minutes for the October 19th meeting, which are attached to the agenda, which I will entertain a motion to approve and or any motions for best. A motion to approve, a second by Eve. Any objections? Seeing none, the meetings for October 19th are approved. And with that, we'll move into our open forum, and I would like to welcome our guest speaker today, Chief Dave Honan, who is here to talk to us a little bit about the work from Cornell University Police. I just have a presentation that we'll share with the folks on the Zoom. Casey will get that up and running, and I'll turn it over to you, Chief Honan.
Great, thank you. Thanks to the Assembly for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm going to speak mainly about the work of the PSAC because that's going to be the most impactful to our department and to the public safety for Cornell. And then I'll talk briefly at the end about what we're doing as CUPD in alignment or in parallel with the PSAC work, and then happy to take any questions at the end. I just want to make sure everybody online can hear me okay.
Head shaking on there. Just a note, Casey, we're seeing the presentation there, but the Zoom is seeing the slide. So we just need to flip kind of how that works there. Sure, how we do that. We have to accept it. What is that?
Like any other class.
Sometimes you take what you get and you don't get upset, right?
Okay.
Oh,
God. Are you still seeing the.
That's okay. I think that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
With that.
Okay. So a little bit of background about the charge to the PSAC. In July 2020, President Pollack outlined a lot of initiatives to promote racial justice. the key one behind it was the Public Safety Advisory Committee. She wanted to elevate and reimagine that committee to be the true advisory panel and provide some guidance to public safety here on this campus. A little bit of background about the PSAC. PSAC is actually established by New York State law. So when we were seeking, you know, what's our advisory group? What's the group that provides oversight? It's a PSAC. It's already been established. So it just seemed to be a real natural fit. Report progress with PSAC. The draft feedback was requested from several community members to make sure the report was comprehensive and vetted. Back in July, the group submitted its recommendations to the president, and you can see a copy of the full report and some of the background research that was done by the group. It's all available on the PSAC website, and that's if you go to the Cornell Police website, cupolice.cornell.edu, you'll see a tab there for the Public Safety Advisory Committee, and on there you can see meeting minutes, the research, and the full report from the PSAC. So PSAC made four recommendations. The first one was a public statement and commitment to enacting anti-racist public safety. And I'm not going to read the whole slide to you, but the details are in the report on the website. The president has acknowledged this, and that is also available on the website, reinstated the university's commitment towards anti-racist public safety. Recommendation number two was to develop and implement an alternative public safety response model. So right now there's a lot of work being done looking at our stats, looking at what we do, how we spend our time, and they're gathering more and more information. As part of this recommendation, they are going to be bringing in a consultant to help guide this process and gather data, figure out what we're going to do and what the recommendation from the PSAC is going to be in the end, in an effort to try to implement another model next year, whether this is further developing the community response team that the president started at the same time she elevated the Public Safety Advisory Committee, or it's coming up with a completely new and different public safety alternate response, somebody that can handle non-criminal, non-violent cases that you just don't need a police officer for. So we're looking forward to do some more work in that area. Recommendation three was design and implement an educational campaign for public safety calls. So people, like, there's a lot of, understanding. You call 911, and people do call 911 for a lot of things. So should we design, how do we design an effort to educate people who to call when? And especially if we have an alternate response model, do you need to call the police, or can you call a number for an alternate response model? Do you need to call the police for something that really doesn't need a police officer? You need somebody that's, say an incident in a residence hall, something that an RHD should be dealing with, or an RA should be dealing with. So we're going to be building some promotional campaign materials to try to educate people when it's appropriate to call police, call 911, and when it's appropriate, where to call, once we develop other numbers and other response protocols, where you should call for different scenarios. And that's recommendation number three. And recommendation number four is diversification of the public safety workforce through an inclusive process. So it's very challenging. I'll just speak from my experience here. Having a police department in central New York and outside of Cornell and Ithaca is not a very diverse area. So it's very challenging to get diverse applicants. So we are routinely trying new things, trying to recruit in different areas, trying to bring in people that will increase our diversity. Our goal, of course, would be to have our diversity match our population here on campus. But when our recruiting area is not as diverse, it's very hard. So, I asked the PSAC for help, and that's something that I would love to hear other ideas. We've tried a lot of things, and it just isn't increasing the diversity the way we want it. So we're hoping we can get some additional information here, different ideas, and really have something that pays off, have actual people make it through our process and through the training that become members of our public safety, and I'm not just talking about officers. I have administrative staff. I do have some casual security guards that work once in a while. The whole telecommunications center. That area is also in need of diversification, and as a whole department, anything we can do to increase that is going to be of value to us. It also talks about training, and we do a lot of training, and we're looking forward to the final recommendations as to where we're a little bit short on our training, where we should adjust to make sure. They talk about trying to develop a Cornell-based faculty-centered curriculum just for officers. There are some other universities that have started programs similar, I don't think quite to what we want to do here, but certainly using our knowledge and the what we have in our education centers here at Cornell would be very interesting to see if we could develop something further, develop even officers to start working towards different degrees through Cornell through some of this coursework. I think would be a fantastic way for us to learn more ourselves, to improve our jobs, but also to be connected with the Cornell community in a much better way. The next one is deployment. So as we look at alternative response models and the need for officers, you know, how do we limit the deployment of weapons, body armor, and tactical equipment where it's practical? And, you know, where can we place people that, because of the size of our campus, we're a vehicle-based. We do have our officers in foot patrol and bicycles, but how do we redeploy an area that we can maybe rely on those foot or bike patrols where people can engage with the community a little bit easier than in the car? So we're looking to improve that. And they're looking also in the future. You know, how do we improve our oversight, the complaint reviews, internal investigations, policies, et cetera. So that's where they're going to head with recommendation number four. And then an update since this started back in August is when President Pollack did issue the response to the SAC report. We've now added Vice President Ryan Lombardi from Student Campus Life. He's the co-chair of PSAC because especially in his area, they have the RHDs, they have RAs, Friends of Life, but they also have, importantly, the Community Response Team, which is a new alternate response model. That reports into Ryan's area. So public safety isn't just the police. It incorporates a lot of efforts here at the university to keep people safe. And Ryan's been a great addition to the team. We've already started our meetings for this year. And then we had some feedback sessions on the 28th and 29th of September. And I don't know exactly where the consultants, I know we have a couple RFPs in, and they were finalizing what work we're going to have consultants help us with. So outside of the PSAC, Brandon asked me to talk a little bit just about who we are at CPD and what we're doing. I wanted to leave plenty of time for questions. So just briefly, we just completed our reassessment, and we're reaccredited by IACLEA. That's the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators. So they come in and they have a couple hundred standards that they come in and do a pretty thorough check of all of our records, our standards. They check our facilities. They write with officers and quiz them. They get public feedback from the community about how we're doing. And we were successful in our reassessment. So we're good for the next 4 years. And IACLEA will be a good partner for the next 4 years, and they'll be back at that time. I'm in the process right now. I think being accredited, I think our policies are really good, but I really felt that we needed to start at the beginning and go through every single policy, rewrite it, and make sure it's up to contemporary standards, make sure there are any, you know, make sure that it is in alignment with anti-racist values and policies. And we are committed to getting those in a position where I can actually publish them. Right now, none of our policies are public-facing policies. They're all internal for how officers operate. I really want to get these policies in a position where I can then post them to our website and have them accessible to the community so we can be transparent about who we are and what we do. We're going to continue our training and commitment to a guardian mindset, which is a mindset to care for our community and protect people. De-escalation skills so that officers when they get to a situation, they're not escalating it. They are taking steps to actively de-escalate it. Community engagement is extremely important in building those relationships with our community. So if people can know who we are, what they can expect from us. You know, otherwise, people can make up their minds how a scenario is going to turn out before we even get there. So we want them to not do it on just what they've heard about us, but build the relationships with us so they know they can trust that they're going to get the highest quality service that we expect of our officers and our community expects of us. And we're continuing a lot of work in the areas of principled policing or procedural justice. There's a couple different terms that are used in this training that New York State offers. There's consultants that come in and offer it. We're taking advantage of any of that we can get. New York State is offering some stuff for free, which has allowed me to get many officers through the state program and to get that into kind of the culture of our department and people understanding that, you know, you got to follow your principles in policing, you got to follow policies, and you got to make it fair for everybody. And that's the key to making sure that we're delivering the quality service we want for our community. And then, of course, support and collaboration for the new community response team. They started briefly last spring, but then they were off for the summer, and then they're back. It's something really new. It's really something innovative that just hasn't really been done before. There's similar models out there that are more based with professional full-time staff that are therapists. These folks are much more in line with our crisis management service. So any of you have ever called and spoken to a crisis manager when a student's having a crisis. This group is aligned very closely with them, and we have had some success stories where we have had calls and we're like, we don't need a police officer there. This is a call where we have a community response team member respond and assist the student, get them connected with the resources that they need. We've had cases where we've had an officer respond for, say, a mental health case, and the officer determined, you know what, you don't need a police officer here. This is not required emergency transport this person needs. And we called in, needs, you know, further guidance. Called in members of the CRT that then worked with that student and made sure they were connected with the resources. So is it perfect? Not yet. But, you know, we're learning as we go, and we're building the program. And I'm happy that we can be a collaborative partner in there. And I think that's going to be the key to success, is having the CRT, you know, understand that, you know, they're going to be able to take some things off of officers, and having officers understand that, you know, some things that we're just used to handling just because we have for over the years, we don't have to handle. It doesn't really need a police officer. It can go to some of these alternate providers. So that's all I had in the formal presentation. I'd be happy to talk further on any subject I talked about or take any questions.
Thank you so much.
Taking my time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chief Hona. I really appreciate that information. And I have a few questions, but I'd love to turn it to the assembly to see if folks have questions or anything like that. Reckon ID?
Do you recruit from the Syracuse area, since it's a relatively reasonable commute?
Yes, we have tried recruiting from Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse,
oh, you have? Okay.
Elmira, Morsehead, Albany, New York City, John Jay College, military.
Did you show them this view?
I should bring all my recruits right here.
Right here.
It's challenging. You got to find somebody who really wants to live in this part of New York State. I'm a native of Rochester myself, so when I found Cornell and I fell in love with being here, especially views like this, you know, trying to bring friends down. And, you know, I had friends that just, they just did not want to be out of a more urban environment, in a larger city where there was just a lot more. Now, Ithaca's changed significantly since my early days here. Now these folks are retired. I'm like, see, you could have come, look where you could have been in the beginning of Ithaca, really growing where it is today. But they love to come visit. So, but, you know, I think Ithaca is developing where it is just such an attractive place now. And I think that maybe we have some things to offer here that people that want to get out of larger cities. It's just such a beautiful area that I think there is something to sell here. And I've just got to figure out, working with PSAC, working with HR, working with different consultants, what are we doing, what are we missing in selling this to a diverse group of advocates? And, you know, I'm not going to say that I have the perfect answer for it. That's why I'm seeking help to help recruit those folks.
Fergie was asking, do they need to move here? Like, could you recruit from Syracuse and people still go home after work?
We could. It's challenging.
But it is challenging. Okay.
The challenge. And I'm not saying that. I do have officers that live in Binghamton, Syracuse, Elmira. You know, I would say that I have officers that do live within probably no more than an hour. The challenge becomes if you work a night shift, when you've been up all night, that drive home, that's a long drive to make when you've been working all night. If there's an emergency, you get held. So we don't leave. If there's an emergency on campus, we stick it out until that emergency is handled. The reports are done and everything to be safe is taken care of. Then that's another long drive you add on top of it. Then we have just a lot of events on campus that require extra officers and extra staffing. And when you fill that in, the commute gets to be a challenge for some folks. I can't say it can't be done because it has. We have that one officer, but in the end, he left us for Syracuse PD. So,
so
one suggestion following up on Steve, putting that in the public, when you thought about this. But if you did have some kind of degree program for recruiting younger officers, because big cities happens, and you know, an ambitious young officer would be trained in those cities. So having something like that would be a real plus. But I do have some questions. In slide 5, you at the bottom says students sometimes fear an unarmed officer. And so I have some questions, because usually we have, in these presentations, we have some statistics or data on enforcement. So three questions. I mean, how many times in the last year has an officer fired a gun in the course of duty? How many times has been drawn a gun, perhaps not firing it? And how many times has there been physical interaction that it goes beyond just holding something. So, in other words, how much of this fear, the student fear, is actually real? How much of it is imagined?
Yeah, well, to answer your questions, I'm sorry, I did not bring stats, right, so I'm going to answer your questions off the top of my head. Outside of training, there has not been officers firing weapon in the course of many years here. Especially since the last 3 years, none. Next question, I believe, was about how many
drawing.
So there have been a couple, but you know, the one that comes to mind was we were looking for somebody who just committed a homicide and we believe they were harmed. So it wasn't pointed at the person, but the officer had it ready if they needed it. So there's been a couple situations like that, but none where they were pointed at the person. And the last question was how many physical altercations. They're rare. We have a couple a year. Certainly, over my career, we've implemented tasers, we've implemented pepper spray. The most important is the de-escalation training. Teaching officers how to talk to people to de-escalate a situation, it's fallen to a small handful. I wish I had the stats in front of me, but I would want to say it was under 10. Our average, I believe, is 12, but it keeps going down, so our average is adjusting downward each year. We also require our officers to do a use of force report anytime they touch them. So if they get used any sort of escort or physically get somebody to move in a certain direction or comply with them, that requires a report. So we do an annual review of that analysis. We see if there's proper actions by the officer. But we also make sure if there are training deficiencies or something we are missing in our training, we need to make sure we train people better on. But what else can we do to improve so that isn't happening as much? And I think we've done really good because of our reduced use of force over the years. It continues to decline.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Ian, and then
my question deviates somewhat from the PSAC report and gets into a campus lighting question. So if Duncan has a question that pertains to PSAC.
You can go first, Duncan.
Okay, thanks. In your October 8th blue light safety message, you solicited feedback regarding campus lighting concerns. I was wondering if you received any, and if at a top level you could share it here.
I didn't receive it. It went to my crime prevention officers, but we did receive some people that volunteered to join the lighting survey, which is something that we do collaboratively with facilities. Student campus light helps out. We gather information and kind of decide where we're going to keep improving lighting over the next year. I know there was a student assembly subcommittee that was really interested in that. I'm hoping they got connected for that walk. If not, I hope that their feedback was received to be included in that report. They haven't finished that report yet, so I don't know what their priority is going to be for the next year. But please understand, it's not that's our big event here to make sure we get student input. That doesn't mean somebody can't drop me an email or drop facilities an email and say, hey, this area is really dark. And they do take it seriously. They go and they look, and sometimes it's surprising. The problem isn't not enough lighting. Sometimes it's the wrong lighting, or there's some lighting that's really bright in one area, which makes another area seem really, really dark. And I think they've done some really good work over the past couple of years. If you look at some of the LED lighting they've been putting around campus, not only is it green, it's a little more energy efficient, but it casts a little more even light over the area. So my feedback to facilities has been, let's keep doing that. That provides such an even lighting. It doesn't have these bright spots and dark spots. And, of course, if it's helping us save energy, that's certainly a win. I hope I answered your question.
Thank you.
Thank you first, Chief, for coming here. Really appreciate it. I guess first, just like clerically, I'd love if we get a copy of the slides. I don't know, Casey, if you have those or if Wendy has them, but I'd love to see them in the box when you take a look at those. I have, you know, a couple questions here and there, but really, I think just the core of it. It's great to see these reports. It's really great to see these recommendations. I'm kind of curious if you can talk a little bit about the follow-up with them, the process of implementing them, and how you hope to work with either this body or other bodies in administration or other bodies from the president's office in implementing these recommendations.
So we're going to, the PSCC is actually, there's membership from each of the governing bodies. So that's some of the input that we get from governing bodies, and certainly open to any other ideas how we work with them better. Right now, we're still doing a lot of information gathering. Sure. So you know, I'm trying to be patient because I really want to just jump into let's get something done. But you got to have the data. You really got to have the information. So right now, it's really one of the projects that we just finished with a subcommittee from the PSAC is parsing through all of our calls and, okay, what are we spending our time doing? And they're still in the process of analyzing that right now. But keep working that and just keep digging to figure out what the best way is to move forward. And then let's jump into it once we get the good recommendation. And we'll live and learn. If we don't hit it right in the mark, the PSCC isn't going anywhere. We can come back and say, okay, well, that was good, but maybe it didn't hit exactly where we wanted to for delivery of services. We can still make adjustments and continue working in certain groups like this for feedback as to how we're doing is going to be very important for us.
I think I got at my next follow-up part of that, which is just about like a timeline. I'm guessing there isn't really a set in stone one.
Yeah, if you go to the PSCC website, certainly for the development of an alternative response model, the committee set some deadlines on themselves. They wanted to do the research during this year, and they wanted an implementation next year.
Okay.
So it seems like a lot of work right now.
That is good to hear.
We're still doing research. It's like, oh, clock's ticking, but it's good to have that deadline because I think the community is going to expect to start seeing something coming out of all this effort. We're willing to be collaborative partners and understand that we want to do our effort to support this as the feedback from the community is really seeking some alternative to police, and we want to support that.
And that's great to hear. And then I guess kind of finally, you can talk a little bit more about kind of the process. We either work with peer institutes or compare ourselves with other community policing services and policing alternatives, and kind of how we hold ourselves to those other institutions. I get there's a lot of research going on. But I'm coming up from the perspective of, like, how do we look at ourselves compared to the Ithaca Police Department? How do we look at ourselves compared to other higher education peer institution police departments? Kind of like, what's the process with comparing with that?
So we're a unique community. So So it's very difficult to say. So we're certainly not a comparison to the police department. That's a municipality. They deal with a very structured set of residents that don't really leave. I have 25% gone every year of my students.
Yeah.
And our staff and faculty, you know, hold out a little bit longer, but there's still a certain turnover. And we have a very diverse community here that has a broad list of expectations. So our focus is being on responsive and listening to what the community wants. Now, how does that compare to other institutions? And again, we have very different institutions. I do talk on a regular basis with all the chiefs and directors of security for all the Ivy Leagues. And one thing we find is, you know, there's some similarities, but there's also, our campus is just very different from a campus like MIT.
Yeah.
So MIT is a very close campus or city environment, same thing with Columbia. So we're a very open campus. In parts of our campus, there's private residences right next to university-owned buildings, right next to student housing. So it's very different. Some campuses have security, some have police, some have a mixture of both. And I think that's where we're at that crossroads right now for us. Many years ago, we got rid of our unarmed officers, and we only had armed officers. We reduced our headcount as a result. So with PSAC, we're seeing there's a need and a want to have unarmed officers back. So we're going to learn, okay, what do we want them doing? Where do we want them focused? And I think we want to develop something that is unique to the Cornell community. I don't think we're going to be well served and meet the needs just by trying to mimic what somebody else has done. I think some of the feedback and information I've heard in PSAC meetings is just brilliant. And I don't want to lose that by just taking what works, and what works in another university may not work here with our community.
Of course. Thank you for that. And I guess going just briefly, I appreciate you adding some clarification on the timelines and especially the different policies and recommendations you've added into. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I just want to make sure, time-wise, we have time for one or two more questions.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. I was just a little confused, thank you, but the CRT is operating now.
Yeah, so the same. I'm sorry.
Four people, did you say?
Yeah, there's currently four people on scene.
So they operate 24/7 or no?
So CRT was created at the same time that the president elevated the PSAC
right.
to report to EVP Joanne DiStefano. And they spent the year figuring out how they were going to structure that, how they were going to build that. At the end of last year, they got up, started having these folks learn the community, learn what their role was going to be, working with us to figure out what calls would they take as opposed to, right. to us. And that's still a work in progress, but we're improving on it. And it is only four people, so you know, it's challenging. They're covering evening and night shifts. They're mainly focused on, I believe, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. They really want to cover those 4 hours of when it does get busy.
And that is expected to expand then, you think? Or?
And they're going to be, it was a 2-year pilot project.
Right.
So they're certainly going to see what they can do to improve that. But also they're going to have to be connected with what PSAC recommendations are to see, okay, does it make sense to expand this with this?
Well, that's still, the PSAC still recommendations. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, for
one more.
Yeah, I just had a very quick question. First of all, I want to apologize for being a little bit late today. Academic obligations for this, but and I also appreciate you being here. I thank you for all those assignments as well. I'm glad that you mentioned that the Cornell Police Department takes a very unique approach to our campus because our campus is very, very unique. Like you mentioned, given that it's so unique and given the open nature of the campus, how do your officers approach possible external threats, whether it's animal life as a more rural campus. You know, I've seen all sorts of different animals walking late at night on the quad or the slope. But also, I think that we'd be naive not to anticipate the possibility of someone from outside the school coming in to do potential harm, however that might manifest itself. So how does the department assess those external threats?
So the biggest thing that we do is we build those relationships with, I'll talk about the external threats first, animals. But I'll talk about animals.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, our animals are generally harmless here, but when there is a problem, we have a wildlife expert that can help us with animals. You saw my bullet message out a couple weeks ago. We had a complaint of students petting wild animals, and people were really afraid that something's going to happen. So, you know, we try to do the educational approach there. And I've talked to students myself. Like, it's a wild animal. It may look cute and cuddly, but please stay away. And, you know, students are fabulous. Students are generally engaging and talk to officers, and officers, you know, try to do that. That's just a friendly reminder and just look, have to be safe. How do we keep people safe from external threats? Well, we develop relationships with all the agencies in the area. So we cross and share jurisdiction with Ithaca Police Department, Cougar Heights Police, Sheriff's Office, State Police. You know, our campus is very big. And we keep relationships with those agencies so we know what's going on. We're paying attention to things on the radio. We do monitor their radio and what's happening at night and during the day. It's not always limited to night. And sometimes strategically place ourselves as a preventative measure if we hear something coming our way. Certainly the one case that you asked about weapon deployment, there was a homicide just in West Campus.
Right.
And we believe there was an armed intruder heading to campus, which caused us to alert the campus using our EMN, which is rarely we get to use that. We want to use it, but if we can warn our community of a threat coming their way, we do use it. And then we strategically position ourselves so we can hopefully prevent that person from coming onto campus. Without, you know, defined borders, it is challenging right. At times, but that's why we do a lot of training. Officers, in addition to the police academy, which takes 6 months, they do a 17-week in-house field training where we not only teach them the technical skills that we want them to know to be a police officer here at Cornell, we teach them the cultural skills of how to be a police officer and how to treat our community. And using those skills, they get out and they get on their own and start learning different areas of this campus. And if someone's going to try to come to campus, they know, you know, the right common routes where people have gone. We also share, you know, information. If we have somebody that's been committing crimes on our campus, we'll connect in back with these agencies and find out, oh, they're doing this elsewhere. Sometimes work collaboratively on a case. If there's an offender that's impacting both Cornell students and off campus, we can work collaboratively with agencies to bring that person to justice.
Sounds good. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. I want to get to the rest of the agenda. I encourage you all to reach out to Chief Hone. I want to thank you for joining us here today. Thank you so much for your time today. And he's offered up, if there were questions that you had that you didn't get to, happy to field those by email. You're happy to send those to me, and I can communicate those to Chief Hone as well. But I greatly appreciate your time and speaking to us today and providing us with those updates.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Free to head out. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. All right. We're going to move on to the next item on our agenda here, update on the President Collins and Vice President Lina's visit to UVA. We'll have to be on November 16th here. Just a note that we will be sending out a volunteer survey. I believe Wendy has that ready to go. And Wendy, if you can just give me a thumbs up, you're going to send that out after the meeting, or do you want me to send that out just so I know which way to go?
I can send it out right now if you want. That's fine.
Okay. Wendy will send out that culture survey. It's just simply, if you would like to submit a question in advance to President Pollack, I encourage you to do so, so that President Pollack and the team only have time to give you an appropriate answer. And we have a deadline to submit those by November 8th. So that would be the timeline in which you have to input your question by. And then President Pollack and Nikki Molina will come here, and they will do about a 15-minute presentation followed by about a 15-minute Q&A opportunity as well. So just wanted to remind folks to, you can submit questions in advance, and then not obviously based on the presentation, you may have questions as well. Anything regarding that visit? Next one, I just want to just give a general reminder for folks. That we do expect and ask you to be here as often as possible, and understand that sometimes things happen in life. You know, you have a job, a classic career, and so many other things that you have to keep up with. And we've accepted a responsibility to be here as a part of the assembly. So I ask that we look to be here as often as possible. And acknowledge if you are unable to make it, letting myself and the Office of the Assemblies know, As I did last time, I knew I had to leave early, so I let everyone know in advance I would be leaving early. It happens. I understand that. And we have some members of the assembly that have had either very little or no interaction with us here, and encourage you all to speak to your constituency groups to make sure that they are up for the task of being here as part of the assembly. And if they're not, acknowledging that, that's okay. It may not be the right environment for every single person. And we want to have a very robust and engaging conversation. So I ask that everybody to be here and be active and be a participant in the assembly. And a reminder that there is a policy that I didn't print out, because I don't like reading policies in meetings. But I think everyone can know when they are not doing well in attendance, and ask folks to be mindful of that aspect. Anything that anyone might like to ask or have questions have or ask questions in regards to that?
First, I think it's, it might be ironic today because I showed up a little bit late for me to be speaking. But with that, at the end of the day, you have a responsibility to be here to represent your constituency, whether you've been appointed by your constituency group or whether you've been elected. If you're on campus, unless there's some sort of extenuating circumstance, we really want you to be here. If there is something in your schedule or some sort of barrier to you being here time and time again, perhaps you should speak, as Brandon mentioned, with your constituency group, because it's not that we don't want you here, it's more of the fact that you're taking up a spot that possibly someone else could fill better if they were there in person. I think it's great that we have Zoom, we have this technology, but I think that there's no doubting our effectiveness goes much further when we're in person.
Any other questions? I would just add that this same thing applies to your committee appointments. So if you're on a committee, that being a part of those and being active and engaged in those conversations, and that's really where a lot of our strength lies, in that committee work, and that's where we see the resolutions coming forth. I just want to encourage everyone to believe me, I chair the CJC, and I know what a nightmare it is to schedule and challenges of students, graduate students, faculty, and staff schedules all combined into one. There are major challenges there. We just ask folks to be as open and flexible as possible to provide that representation for you. All right, with that, we'll move on to resolution number 2. On the agenda here, which we had tabled in our last meeting. So it's been a while since we had a tabled resolution, I believe. Can't recall if we need a motion to bring that back.
No.
I don't believe so. I think we can just pick that right up and turn it over to Jacob.
I'm actually going to turn it over to folks from the Student Assembly side. Because they actually have passed it. So if they want to, I was there, of course. If you guys want to give a brief rundown on how it was passed and how it contrasts, that's for your jurisdiction.
Yeah, I can look up. I believe it was a unanimous vote, but I just want to make sure I got that right. It was, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it was passed unanimously by the Student Assembly with basically no concern phase.
Right, and if I'm not mistaken, they passed in the exact language that had been passed by the GPSA. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the version that's included in today's packet is the original version that was introduced last time. But the amendments are in the minutes, so there's that. Moving forward as having submitted the resolution to this assembly, I'm just curious, I would like to hear from all of you as to your thoughts regarding the amendments that were made, as well as how you all feel we should proceed. Perhaps Ian, if you want to say anything about that as a fellow co-sponsor, as well as Duncan, other folks on there, I can't really see them.
Yeah, the sunshine is casting a glow on the screen, but I'll recognize Nick.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brandon. I was just going to say the resolution as I've sponsored it is the resolution that I've just linked in the chat, which is the one that the GPSA passed. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, that the resolution that we're discussing is the resolution that was passed by the GPSA with the exact same wording, except the only difference is the resolution number has changed.
Thank you. Just want to remind folks, if you do look in your packet in the meeting notes from the previous, you'll see what the motions that were passed for making changes to the resolution. So if you look at the third page here, and bullet XD. So you have here that there was a motion to strike the line cancel to on in the resolution on line, and then 46. The finally resolved, the Cornell University Administration will establish Veterans Day as a university holiday where course and employment attendance is not required for veterans of Cornell University on November 11th. And then you look further below there, additional amendment on line 46 to 48 there. The final resolve is Cornell University established November 11th as Veterans Day, a university holiday where portion employment attendance is not required for veterans. So it's moved a couple of times there, original to some alterations of it. So if we were looking to make changes back to what was in line with the GPSA, we would obviously need a motion for
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm still confused. The student assembly passed the version we have here, or it passed the version that as it was amended 2 weeks ago by us?
As it was amended.
No.
We passed how the GPSA
was
amended.
Okay. And what does the GPSA pass?
So they virtually... if they pass what is pretty much this, I'm trying to see if I can find
the university policy.
Can I share my screen and I can show it?
Yeah, please do.
I believe it was what we have. We did like a first set of amendments. I think that was the version that the GPSA passed was with the first set of amendments that this body added.
Can clarify, that's the
I
word.
I also have it here.
This is the GPSA version, correct? Yeah. Your name is
up. Yeah, because that's the same version I have the essay version right in front of me, with the language university affiliates,
right,
instead of veteran staff. So before the changes made,
Right. Now, we, just as a refresher, we discussed last meeting how this language was unlikely to produce any tangible results should we pass it, should all the assemblies pass it, and it goes to board of trustees. Now, with that, as it stands here, I don't see, especially, you know, in conjunction with Deborah's comments last week, or 2 weeks ago, rather, I don't see this passing at all in the employee assembly. Whether or not it passes in the faculty senate, I don't know. I have my doubts. So the strategy moving forward regarding having this resolution pass in this identical form in all of the assemblies is fruitless endeavor, to say the least, in my opinion. I mean, because it will never happen. So if we want to be pragmatic and actually get something, we should consider the amendments either that were made last meeting or that we want to make moving forward. I know it might upset or offend people. That might be possible, but just know that if we choose to vote as it stands, as it stood from the GPSA, this will never pass. I believe, Richard, you might have had your hand up.
Well, just a question.
Yeah.
So... I mean, from the minutes, there were two amendments. It's the second one, which is 16, that was finally applied. Is that right? Where? No, page number 16. XVI.
Yes. Yep.
So it's that one?
That is what technically we have
here at our assembly.
So if this resolution were what? In the form that we considered it last time,
yeah,
that passage 16 would replace 46 to 48.
Right.
Okay. Were there any other changes?
There were a few, but essentially it all harkens back to that. That is like the crux of the resolution.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure because
right.
46 is 15 is also the same thing, but that's not
right. Right. That would apply similarly to that.
That was the question.
And then I think Nick had his hand up, and then I'll go to Eve. Go ahead, Nick.
Thanks. I can't virtually raise my hand while I'm sharing my screen. So I just don't think I have 2 points to kind of respond to what Jacob was saying. On one hand, I don't think that it's the university assembly's place to think about how other assemblies are going to take the resolution. I think we should vote our conscience and vote what we've, you know, what we have in front of us. I don't think it really is in our place to think about how the employee assembly or the faculty senate might perceive this. And as a second point, I also do think that if we were to engage in that discussion, it's kind of weird to just say, well, there's absolutely no chance that it'll pass, considering I'm quite confident that no one in this room has done a polling of the general opinion of employees or faculty about how they would feel about this resolution. I just think that it's a little misleading to say that there's no chance that this will pass in this form in any other assembly. So one, I don't think we should be engaging in that conversation to begin with, but two, if we do, I think we should do so prudently and actually, you know, make sure that we can support what we're saying.
Thank you, Nick. Recognize Eve.
Did you want to respond, Jacob?
Yeah, sure. I think I can support what I'm saying. If you were here last meeting, you would have heard the comments that were made across the board. So that is just my opinion. It's what I think that the record shows. The minutes from last meeting show is virtually fact.
Okay. I just wanted to ask, is there, assuming this gets passed here, and approved here, will the GPSA and the SA harmonize their resolutions with this one? No. Okay.
Right, and the GPSA and SA have both passed resolutions.
Yes, but then the question is, are they going to go back to them and harmonize with this one, or stay as they are? You know, stay as they are. Okay.
I mean, I think just speaking for my assembly, I think that the original version that was brought to us was this, the one we've amended, just specifically getting the day off for veteran staff and veteran students. And so it was brought up to make that amendment, and that's what we passed because, you know, that's what we thought was the best for everybody. So.
Yeah, I think I would second that. I didn't bring it to the floor. I know Duncan did, so I'm not sure if like he would be open to an amendment on the floor. But I will say that it has already been submitted to President Pollock, so it's under her review.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess just seconding both those, or yeah, thirding, seconding both those points. I had submitted on the floor, and you know, I was merely just presenting it. I got to speak with some really great veteran students and a lot of people who co-signed this. And I think the student assembly very firmly in a unanimous vote passed in support of university affiliates because they stand behind that language. You know, I'm really happy we got to have a really fruitful conversation as described about university affiliates. From my perspective as a student assembly representative to the university assembly, my representation is for primarily the student assembly and students. That perspective stands, I think, very clearly for the language of university affiliates, not with the other amendments to alter the language, should I say. That said, you know, I think it's one of those things where really we're looking at a situation where students want to help students from the student assembly perspective, and I think no language better encapsulates that than keeping university affiliates rather than veteran staff rather than specific amendments. But, I mean, that discussion, of course, could carry on. So
Thank you very much for Preston, Emily, and Duncan, the same name, in case Casey needs that portion there. And then I'll recognize David.
Yeah, I want to make something clear because I think that it's getting lost in the conversation. I don't know if this is a product of idealist thinking or what it is, but it seems as though folks are trying to insinuate that I wouldn't be in favor of the resolution as it was proposed by the GPSA, and that couldn't be further from the truth. I am. I'm in favor of those sentiments wholeheartedly. And Duncan brought up a very important point that we represent the students and we work on behalf of the students. And I personally believe that the way to do that, and not just work on behalf of the students, but work on behalf of the entire community here at the University Assembly, is to be pragmatic in our approach, taking an ideological hard stance is not conducive to gaining anything tangible. Now, if that's the approach that the stakeholders want to take, I'm more than happy to set that conversation. We actually have a member from the community here. I'm not sure if he'd like to speak. If we can, if a community member can speak with me, is Roland Molina. He is the president of the Cornell Veterans Association. I believe I got that right.
Cornell undergraduate.
Cornell undergraduate. There we go. So I would really like to hear his perspective on that as well.
Similarly, a co-sponsor as well.
He is also a sponsor. Yeah.
I would like to go up to the
table. You can speak from there. Fine. Recognize Roland. Go ahead.
So if I understand this, the matter at hand right now, you're considering amendments to change it to what is that? I'm sorry, I apologize.
Do you want to grab one of the
here? Maybe, well, take a quick brief look at that. I saw, Emily, you had your placard up. I don't know if you wanted to throw out a comment while we get some clarification. So recognize that one.
Yeah, my question was for Jacob. I was just wondering, and pardon me, I wasn't at the last meeting, I hadn't seen a lot of the time. Just like some of like maybe the intention that was happening and like maybe like thoughts on like what you would do to basically adapt this.
Yeah.
More palatable.
Right. So I think that without some of that background, it's really tough for folks who aren't here maybe be engaged in the conversation. So I was actually involved in writing the original version of the resolution alongside the former chair, Logan Kenny, who's now doing great things in the legal field, legal sector. So that's besides the point. So we had written the resolution and which virtually identical to the way that GPSA had passed it. They had simply swapped out language that you see here in the packet on line 5. They had switched the two words veteran staff and also, as it's seen on line 47, veteran staff with university affiliates to be more broad in terms of their language, being more encompassing of all different agencies here at Cornell. I was fired up. We were going to pass that. I was very excited. But members of the assembly have brought forth really good points regarding different obstacles that might stand in the way. I don't want to speak on their behalf, but if I can simply summarize, a lot of it had to do with requirements from the state of New York regarding credit hours, as we discussed briefly at the student assembly meeting. There was serious hesitancy from the employee assembly as well to gain the backing of this bill, for us to gain backing of this from them, and specifically Deborah Howell, who she is the head of a committee. I don't remember.
When you're done, do you want me to add?
Yeah, please do. You know, just jump in because okay. I don't know.
And I'm sorry, I don't see Deborah here. I'm sorry.
Right.
So ahead. Is it okay? So the employees have a veterans colleague network group, and Deborah is the chair of that. And she shared this with the veterans colleague network group, and they don't support the resolution. They feel, and this has come up in the past, they feel, as they have in the past, that the university does a lot to support and recognize veterans, and that a day off is not something that they feel the university needs to do to support veterans.
They also have concerns. Are there other holidays that should be recognized and those constituents with those identities be given the day off? So those were the two big concerns, and I'm sorry that she's not here to speak for that, but since the employee assembly relies on our veterans representative in these kind of issues, and since Deborah is also the chair of the veterans CNG, we rely heavily on her advice for this resolution. And as it stands, it isn't something that we would support.
Thank you, Jessica. And I know we've recognized Paul, but I want to just recognize Nick so we can have our assembly members stop speaking and we'll turn to our back public.
Thanks, Brandon. So I just wanted to say, to just the point of whether there would have to be other holidays that are recognized for other constituents groups, I think that's resolved with this proposal that I have up on the screen, because it addresses all university affiliates as opposed to only those that identify as veterans. And then moreover, to address the point of they're not, New York State not allowing a certain amount of classes being canceled for credit hours, actually, New York State does allow for discretionary cancellation of classes by university presidents within a certain frame, so within a certain amount of days in a given year. So one day is totally within the discretionary power of a university president. And then lastly, I really don't think that this is an idealistic, or at least for me as a sponsor, this is not something that I'm doing out of, you know, idealism or wanting to prove a point. It's really because I genuinely firmly believe that all of us should have a day off for a federally recognized holiday. So it's Armistice Day, it's Veterans Day, it marks the end of the First World War. I fully believe that this should be a recognized holiday for everyone. And it is a federal holiday. And Cornell does take federal money. So I'm just putting that out there. But, and I am aware that it won't happen this year, but I think that it's something that we should ask for and not compromise on. I do think that it's feasible, and I do think that it can happen.
If no other hands from the assembly at this time, I can recognize Roland to speak from the community. And state your full name again so we have that for the record, please.
Of course. So I'm Roland Molina. I'm the president of the Cornell Undergraduate Veterans Association. I represent 93 undergraduate veterans within our community. And I'm here in support of the original language as passed by the GPSA and the SA. I believe to dilute this language, making it so that only veterans or veteran-related individuals within our community are able to celebrate, would only serve to other that community. It is a nationally recognized holiday. You know, I mentioned this to several people, the fact that Cornell lists on their calendar Veterans Day, classes held, and I got a lot of disbelief. You know, I can't imagine that, you know, a holiday that's been evolved from Armistice Day, victory of World War I, that the next year classes would be held if we were in that World War I era. To dilute this language, making it so that only certain members of our community can observe that holiday, is totally contrary to what Veterans Day is. It is not just for veterans. It is for everyone within this community, within this nation. I cannot support these amendments as they're written. That's all I have.
Richard?
Oh, it's gone. But Nick's version, that isn't the version that's before us.
No, it's not.
Okay, I just want to make that.
Yeah, I want to just
make certain we know what we're doing.
Yeah. Take a moment to clarify where we are.
Right.
Besides 401 Fiscal Sciences, we have with us in front of us a resolution that was presented that was then made amendments to, And so I want to just make sure that the resolution that was passed in the SA and the GPSA is not what we are currently looking at. In order for us to get that to be in line with it, it would require an additional resolution to the amendment to the resolution, which we can do here. But I want to just clarify that the two lines that are primarily in question will be lines 5 and lines 48.
And,
Yeah, I can share it with you.
If, yeah, if you want to share the amended, written as it is, amended, correct.
Yes.
You have that available?
Yes. Now, or Wendy's.
There we go. So if you were to look for it here.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's different numbers on the student assembly version.
Yeah, the number might be different.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the, I misunderstood.
This is, that's the Wendy, if you can clarify, this is the resolution as it is amended. Is that correct? Here on the floor?
Yes, this is the resolution as amended from the meeting on the 19th.
Okay, so if you look at line 5, it says where course and employment attendance is not required for veteran affiliates of Cornell University. And if you go down to line 48 or 9, I believe it would be, you'll see the other adjustment here where we see that it says university holiday where course and employment attendance is not required for veteran affiliates of Cornell University. So again, this current resolution on the floor is addressing for veterans. Nick, go ahead.
So I would like to propose an amendment to this resolution, and I would like the amendment to be as follows. I'm sending it in the chat, but basically line 47 through 49 should state, be it finally resolved, the Cornell University Administration will cancel both course attendance and required work for university affiliates each academic year on November 11th at the date of the nationally recognized holiday. And line five should say, this resolution calls on the university administration to establish Veterans Day as a university holiday where courses are canceled and university affiliates are not required to work. That's the amendment that I'm putting forward.
Second. You have a second for that motion?
Can I comment on that?
Yes, we are in the comment phase.
All right. So just for clarity's sake, you are just undoing the amendments, which is fine, that were proposed last meeting. If that's the case, I'm willing to support you on that. I'm willing to support that. I support that. But you have to understand, we'll get nothing from that.
Nick, would you care to comment?
Yeah, I disagree that we get nothing from it, and I still am putting forward this amendment. So if there's a second, then I'd like to call the question on the amendment, or at least have a debate on the amendment.
So there was a second for that, and we are in discussion here, and I have a couple of hands here. I'm going to recognize Annalie and then Preston.
Yeah, so I actually have a question for Jessica. Based on like what you had just presented, you said that the employee assembly would not basically support the current resolution. Is that like based on a poll of employee assembly members, or just from you personally?
That's from me as the chair, based on the feedback from our veterans representative and other employee representatives are free to vote however they want, but it's me speaking as the chair of the employee assembly.
Thank you.
Yeah, so my question was also for Jessica. So, like, kind of off of that, so this, do you foresee a resolution similar to this being proposed within the time?
I don't.
Okay. Yes, okay.
I guess then following the line of dialogue, because I think the really debate here seems to be, does the university assembly fall in line with the GPSA and SA, or do we alter the language in this resolution here? That seems to be what the conversation is held. I guess then my question then to you, Jessica, is do you have any thoughts or comments on the amendments made in the previous meeting where we were, I hate to use the word, dilute, but that was, you know, as you discussed, that dilutes the language. Is there any, can you make any comment to that from the employees assembly perspective?
As to the resolutions at the last meeting, I believe several of us abstained from voting because it doesn't, that's, no matter what those changes were, it's still not, we're still not going to be on board. We did also offer and recommend that the sponsors work with the veteran CNG to come up with a resolution that they could support, that veteran staff could support.
So and follow up, if I may. To clarify, the employee assembly at this time, from your comments as the chair, are not looking to move forward with this resolution or the amended resolution of the previous meeting. So if, in a broader context about looking beyond just the student assembly of GPSA and the UA, the employee assembly is not moving forward on this, nor is it moving forward on the previous amendment and the last one at this time.
No one has brought anything to my attention.
Okay.
And just before I recognize you, just want to remind that we had a motion for amendments and we are in discussion around the motion for the amendment.
And they were seconded.
And they were seconded, yes, yes. So we have opportunity for continued conversation and then at some point for all the questions.
So I approved the revised language in the last meeting. But I did find it very compelling that the chair of the Veterans Network Group would not support either version and seemed to, I felt, had compelling reasons for why that might be. And it wasn't just her opinion. She went to her group and spoke to other veterans as employees of Cornell. And I really would advocate for the student assembly and the GPSA and the UA to think about asking and collaborating with that group just to understand what is it that would be possible. And then the faculty senate can come in as part of that conversation as well. But it just seems like a core constituent felt uncomfortable with this request. And so maybe we should try to understand why, and is there a way for us to collaborate on this?
I believe I saw Amelie and then Nick.
Yeah, so my question was actually for Dean Yesa. I had a question just like regarding like faculty senate like perspectives on this resolution. I was wondering if like this is planning to go to the floor at all or if you've heard any feedback from faculty members.
So I haven't taken this back. Just like, I haven't taken this back to the faculty just because of the timing. This is so close and the faculty senate only meets once a month. But I'm completely open to bringing it in time for us to consider this for next year, especially if we can bring in the EA and their veterans committee into the conversation.
Okay, you recommend Nick?
Thanks. So I think it's very important to bring the EA Veterans Association in the conversation as well. What I would like to say though is that this one has been brought to us by a number of veterans. You can look at the list of sponsors. A lot of them are veterans, a lot of them are students, and some of them are alumni. So it's not that this isn't representative of the wishes of veterans. So what I'm thinking is if this resolution is brought to us by a certain group and they're asking us to do something for them, then we should vote on it and support them if we feel like what they're asking for is warranted. Certainly, if the employee veterans group wants to bring something to the table and wants us to help them out with anything, I would be more than happy to support another resolution, to write another resolution, to kind of give whatever it is that they think that they would like, that they would request. However, I see 20 or more veterans on this resolution that have signed on to it saying this is what we want, and they represent large groups of students that are veterans as well. So I don't think we should say, well, no, we won't give you what you're asking for because we want to talk to other people as well. I think we should support them in what they're asking for, and then if we want to support another group as well, we should by all means do that. I don't think our support for one group should be contingent on our support for another group.
Thank you. Recognize Ian.
Thank you. I have a question for Jessica. To your knowledge, did the Employee Assembly's Veterans Group voice any concerns about the possibility of lost wages or a reduced pecuniary benefit as a result of this holiday? Is that an area of concern?
I did not hear anything about that.
Yes, please.
So, Nick, I just want to clarify. Part of the concern that I'm hearing from the two student assemblies is that the president may not, at least Jacob expressed, that the president may not move forward with this as is. So I'm only suggesting that it would be really compelling if all the assemblies on campus came to some harmonized language, then maybe we could get something.
I think that sometimes it's important to remember that it's important to make our decisions, you know, within the shared governance model, not based off of what we think the president will do. I think if that was what the GPSA, you know, why we changed that resolution, it was important to, you know, veterans, it was also important to the students who weren't veterans, that this becomes, you know, their remembrance, just like it is in other, all other facets of the country. When they brought this up to me, when Logan, like, contacted me, I was like, what do you mean? Like, this isn't, like, a day that we get off. Like, I just couldn't understand that, and I also just can't understand why the veterans representatives of the employee assembly, like, also are not on board with this. I was just very confused about that, because Deborah's response to me, like, in the last meeting, was just very similar to President Pollock's response to the, because she responded to the GPSA's resolution. It was just very, like, similar. I was just very puzzled about that, and why a group wouldn't want, like, a day that is for them, why they wouldn't want to be recognized. It was just very confusing.
Just a reminder, we have a motion for an amendment to the resolution on the floor still.
Can I motion to vote?
Yeah, on the question, do we have a second?
Second.
Specifically, where we're voting on.
So we have a call to question from Emily and a second from Preston on the motion to amend lines 5 and 48. And Nick, if you'd like to restate those two lines that are lines.
Yeah, absolutely. So line 47 through 49 should say, be it finally resolved, the Cornell University Administration will cancel both course attendance and required work for university affiliates each academic year on November 11th, the date of the nationally recognized holiday.
And then you had one for line 5. And
line 5 is, this resolution calls on university administration to establish Veterans Day as a university holiday where courses are canceled and university affiliates are not required to work.
All right, thank you. So with that, we have a call question in a second. So all those in favor of the motion to amend the resolution, if you can either raise your hands on Zoom or raise your placards. Give Casey a moment.
It's 8.
I think we have 9. We have 5 here and 4 on Zoom.
Oh, it's 5
vote?
Here. So.
If you could just put your hand and placard back up for us so we can make sure we have that accurately.
There's 5 here.
5.
And there's now 3 on Zoom.
And Marcy, did you have your hand up? Maybe someone else had their hand.
Yes, I did. Sorry, I don't know. I'm having an issue.
That's okay. So that puts you at 9 in favor. All right. And then all those opposed? Placards up and raise your hand on Zoom.
I think it's 3 opposed.
And then abstention.
Oh, there's one more.
4.
Caroline, is that in opposed?
Yes,
in opposed. So there's 4 opposed. And then abstentions.
Seems like it's just. Two. That's 9 to 4 to 2.
Okay, and then did everybody vote with the highest on here?
She's still with us?
Yeah, she's still with us.
If I could ask for everyone to vote.
I think we're missing one person.
I'm not sure.
Hello?
May not be here. So, as it is, you said 9 in favor, 4
9
opposed.
In favor, 4 against, 2 abstain.
And we have a total of 16 here. Mm-hmm. So with that, the motion does pass with the majority here. So those amendments do pass. Yes, I'll recognize Nick.
I'd like to call the question on the resolution as amended.
Do I have a second? Seconded by Duncan. All right.
Yeah, I voted in favor of the last one, so I believe it would be 10.
Okay. Let the record note that the previous resolution, amendments to the resolution were 10, 4, and 2. Okay. With that, we are now calling question on the resolution as amendment, as amended. So all those in favor, again, raise your placards or Zoom hands for me, please.
1, 2, 3, 4. No, on Zoom, it's 1, 2, 3, 7.
Yep, there's 3 there.
8.
We have 5 here, and it looks like...
Looks like 3.
3 there.
On Zoom. So that's
all right,
8.
And those opposed?
Six opposed.
And then extensions. And
3 extensions. Or 4 extensions?
No, just 1. There's still. David, are you
abstaining?
I think David
is abstaining.
Or an opposed?
Yeah, I'm abstaining.
Abstaining. So,
so 2 extensions.
8, 6, and 2.
Which
all right.
Is 6.
Okay. And with that, the resolution is at 50%. Right? What does that do?
Oops.
It does fail. Yeah. With that, the resolution does not pass.
I'd like to make a motion to table this. Nick, do you want to say something real quick?
Yeah, I do have a point of order. The resolution should... Doesn't the resolution need just a simple majority of those present to pass?
Well, we have... Thank you, Nick. I appreciate the clarification because I'm not always sharp on these items. We have 8 in favor, 6 against, and 2 abstaining, so it is a split vote. And well, not split, but 8 in favor, 6 opposed, and 2 abstaining. So with that, pass, I'll take a recommendation.
No, that, it passes then.
It passes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I'm not great.
No, I thought it was a typo.
No, no, it was not typo. It was 8 in favor, 6 opposed, and 2 abstaining. And with that, thank you all for helping me get through that. The motion passes.
I'm sorry. What was the numbers?
8 in favor, 6 opposed, and 2 abstaining.
I,
you have to call for a reconsider.
Right. All right.
Do you like to do that, Jake?
Yes, I do want to reconsider. I want to reconsider a motion to revote. Is that parliamentary?
Well, now we're getting into the weeds here. Now we're getting into the weeds. I don't have my father's rule.
Yeah.
You can move to reconsider. It needs a second.
Right.
So I
do move to reconsider.
It has to be someone who supported the original motion.
Right. So, yes, I was.
You were.
Yeah.
So you move to reconsider. It needs a second. So I would second that.
Okay.
And then we could just revote.
All right. We have a motion to reconsider and a seconded. Wendy, if you need to help me guide me through this, don't hesitate to do so, but I think we're in good shape or... accept any comments to make sure we're in line here. I'll recognize Nick and then Valerie.
Yeah, point of order. So for a motion to reconsider, we would have to vote on reconsidering first, and reconsidering would have to pass with a simple majority, and then we would have to vote again. And the motion to reconsider should come from someone that initially voted in favor. I don't know if that requirement was met, but the first vote that we would have to do would be a vote on whether we're willing to re-vote on this.
Thank you, Valerie.
So I was just curious, and I, of course, I don't know the points of order or any of that stuff. So my question is, would there be some sort of explanation about why we are trying to re-vote on this? Is there a particular reason, Jacob, why you're...
Yeah, sure. I'll be transparent because I have been the entire meeting. So why stop now? I would vote against it in favor of tabling for the next meeting so we can engage in some of those conversations that Dean DeRosa had mentioned with other constituents who are, of course, would be affected by this. So we can have folks on more of the same page to get something... not to put it more feasible through. I don't know. plainly, I'd be more comfortable passing something where we can all, or most of us can be in favor of it, because that, to me, would indicate that the president might be in favor of it. The president already shot down the student assembly. The president already shot down the GPSA. That will happen again here. I guarantee it. So for us to table and make some amendments and work together to really get something that has some sort of sliver of a chance in getting something for the veteran community, I think is the best way to support veterans personally.
Jacob, I just want to remind folks that I don't believe that would take a pretty complicated scenario, what you've just stated there, because not only do we need to reconsider the vote, we would also need to have a rescinding of the motion to vote in the first place. So I think I would ask you to consider the number of elements required in order to undo the fact that we are voting on the resolution. It would require not just your reconsideration, but then that passing, and then a reboot, and then a recall of the motion to question. Wendy, would you care to chime in on any points of order or things that I may be missing?
No, Alva, you are right with what Nick had said. You have to vote on the reconsideration and then vote again. I did just want to point a clarification. The resolution has been submitted to and responded by the president for the GPSA, but not for the SAS. So, Jacob, you were a little ahead of yourself in saying that she responded already to the student assembly, and she has not yet. So I just
I misinterpreted what was said.
I wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying.
So again, we are on a motion to reconsider that has been seconded.
Right.
So at this point, then we would need to vote on that motion to reconsider. Okay.
Call the question.
They will call the question. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All right. With that, then we are voting on the motion to reconsider.
So call the question.
Yeah.
I guess it's more for you, Jesse. I think a lot of the discussion about why reconsidering, and in full honesty, I completely understand the argument. I think undoubtedly what goes on in the GPSA and the SA, it's something that can be overseen by the president, for lack of a better term, sometimes, if it's just approved. I think there's similar concerns here, if I'm channeling that correctly. I'm just curious, though, from your perspective, Jessica. You previously suggested some, reservations about the amendments made in the previous meeting. The amendments essentially changing it to focus more on veterans specifically, right? The amendments in, if you want to follow along, is that pages aren't numbered.
I just want to clarify. We do have the motion.
This is building to a point of personal purpose, I promise you. I'm asking more along the lines of if this language changed away from university affiliates, you personally don't think will pass or be presented from the UA. If you could speak candidly just more about if there is any language you think that would be more relevant for the UA, or EA, excuse me.
And I'll allow it.
Thank you. I really don't have an answer for you. I'm sorry. I would really rely on our veterans representatives and the Veterans Colleague Network Group. So, and that she is not here tonight.
Sure.
So I don't have an answer, I'm sorry.
Thank you. And then can I ask a separate point of privilege?
I'd like to go ahead and do the motion as it stands, and it's appropriate for us to do the motion to reconsider. Before we get to other hands here, I'd like to go ahead and follow that. So all those in favor of the reconsideration, please raise your placards or Zoom hand in favor.
Yes. Two on Zoom. Five. Seven.
So you have two on Zoom, five here, so seven.
Yes.
And all those opposed?
Six. Eight.
Eight. Abstentions?
Two. Caroline, is that an abstention or one?
With that, the motion does not pass to reconsider.
Also, a point of personal privilege and information, actually, both. I'm really uncomfortable with us having discussions after a question is called. So I just really want to make sure that once we've called a question and we've had a second to that, we cannot be entering discussion again, because that's just fundamentally undemocratic.
Thank you, Nick. Recognize we are at 6 o'clock, so in order for us to continue, I would entertain a motion to extend the meeting.
I'd say
we have a motion.
Yeah,
I can't do the motion.
Yeah. Motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
Motion to extend by 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'd say.
Seconded by Jacob. Any objections? Seeing none, the meeting is extended by 10 minutes, and I'll recognize Preston. So with that, we have the resolution passes with the amendments there, with the motion to reconsider. So we do have a little bit left here for any assembly reports, and acknowledging we are short on time. If there are no specific items, I'm comfortable with you passing to your assembly reports, but we'll start with the student assembly.
Yeah, I can pass.
Don't feel obligated to do so. I just wanted to acknowledge it's okay.
No, you're saying that.
I laid that out there. Now you can do something. Please feel free to go ahead.
Yeah, I pass.
All right, thank you, Emily. We'll move to the GPSA.
Well, just real quick. We got rid of paperless agendas. That was a nice resolution to pass. And then we also approved the budget. And then we're proposing some different charter amendments having to do with extending the deadline for this byline funding cycle, and then creating a mechanism to fill vacant seats that different graduate schools are unable to fill. So that's just kind of short and sweet. Yes.
Grandpa, you said you got rid of paperless agendas?
Yes.
So you were going paperless for your meeting, and you had challenges to that?
No, I'm sorry. We added paperless agendas.
Thank you. Any questions for Reverend? All right. Next up, the employee assembly.
And I would just like to say that we did conclude our special election, and we have 5 new members. So that was really good. We're happy to have them join us. We're excited to have some more members on the EA.
Thank you very much, Jessica. Any questions or comments for Jessica? Faculty Senate.
I will actually, hope you guys don't mind, take a few minutes just to say, because I might not be able to come to the next one, so I just want to let you know what's on our agenda. We're considering 2 proposed resolutions to make tenure track, sort of tenure processes a little bit more transparent. And then we're also going to be considering a senator sponsored resolution looking at a new program that the university's about to propose called Global Hubs, coming from the Vice Provost of International Affairs. So we'll be considering that. And President Pollock will be coming for her semester visit. Those are the big items.
Any questions for you? All right. Thank you. Then we'll move to committee reports.
No, I think we touched on a little bit earlier. The meeting membership, the meeting participation, of course, your membership is contingent upon you being here. If you're not here persistently, you might want to reconsider why you joined here in the first place. So that is important that we discussed. We discussed briefly about President Pollock and Vice President Molina attending the University Assembly on the 16th. Of course, if you have any additional things you'd like to ask, please feel free to fill out that survey. We had a few questions that we had gone over very briefly regarding the relationship with the Chinese University, I believe. Peking University was on the agenda to be discussed. Very surface level questions regarding energy usage and utilities, whether it's in respect to the borehole project or other energy usage issues and initiatives that might be taken up by the University Assembly or other assemblies. And I believe there was one more.
We had on there the financial help of the university as it pertains to both access and availability of financial aid, as well as addressing repairs and maintenance to university infrastructure and residence halls. And we had, and there was an additional one having to, and again, these are things we've asked the president to speak to, and President Pollock will choose whether or not to engage in them in her presentation. The last one was speaking to the staff experience and acknowledging and understanding the changing times and post-pandemic and what will be done to enhance and grow the staff experience and continue to attract talent when it comes from a staff perspective.
That's all.
Any questions from folks on those items? You know, James is not here for the COVID Judicial Committee. I don't believe has passed if anyone can give that report. So we'll move on to the Campus Welfare Committee. Deborah Howell is not here. And then I think that that will end it then on the Structure, Technology, and Environment Committee.
Two brief items. Unfortunately, one of our members from the University Assembly, the Employee Assembly had to resign last week because she is taking a job outside of Cornell. So I invite the Employee Assembly to nominate a new representative. And then second item, just briefly, this past week I met with Springbrook Buck, the Associate Director of Facilities Management and Logistics, and Dan Scheid, the Director of Cornell Grounds, to discuss the placement of waste and recycling receptacles around campus. And they have invited me to submit proposals for specific locations of additional waste receptacles, which they will consider. So if anybody has any specific locations that they are interested in, say in a common area or high traffic area specifically, that they would be interested in seeing a waste receptacle, please reach out.
Questions?
Yeah, I did have. And yes, I had that down on my notes, but since we were abbreviated. We did, however, appoint an employee representative, and I believe he's connected with you. So I think our other seat is filled.
I do not believe so, actually.
Okay, well, I'll email you tomorrow, and also with us.
Okay.
I know some student assembly members who are very passionate about that specific issue. I'm wondering if you can give some details just briefly about timelines moving forward with that submissions.
Sure. We met on Friday. They invited me to submit specific location proposals to them, essentially as soon as I had them. Now I want to clarify that, you know, the proposed locations does not necessarily mean that they will automatically be built.
Of course.
Because, you know, one of the things that was emphasized in our meeting is that this is an issue that has come up every couple of years at Cornell. And one of the things that they really try to do in order to be in line with the campus sustainability goals is not put waste receptacles or recycling receptacles in locations where it is not economic to do so and actually results in more energy burn in terms of the fuel required to service those, in terms of the trash truck that picks them up, the plastic liners that have to go into those bins, and then the employee hours, you know, spent who have to do that, especially now with the staffing challenges that the university is having. So specifically what we're looking for is areas where it makes sense from a both trash collection volume standpoint, in order to align with what it would actually cost to service those areas. But as far as timeline, they did not give me the impression that this would be something that would take very long to implement if there was a strong interest in specific areas.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll just add, I'm almost out of time. Working on North Campus, the amount of garbage piled up in different areas is concerning. You know, there's just enough extra garbages that have been in place since move-in weekend that continue to get filled and filled and filled. And so I agree with what they're saying, that, you know, it's not, the answer isn't just putting more trash cans in places and generating more garbage. What are some ways in which to address it more effectively? I definitely appreciate that approach. Seeing the garbage cans get filled over and over and over again outside dumpsters, outside of on North Campus, it's kind of upsetting. I acknowledge that that's That their hope is to reduce the amount of garbage that's happening and try to find other ways. And if the recycling bins just are in a place where they're going to be garbage anyway, it doesn't help the system. I encourage everyone to reach out with thoughts and ideas for that. So thanks for writing. Any other questions or comments from folks? With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn or otherwise. Or
okay, motion to adjourn.
To adjourn. Do a second. Do a second. Any objections? Seeing none, thank you all so much for a great conversation this evening.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.